You, Jen, Jen, 60 million. Lydia, you go.
59 million. I'm that tall.
59,900,901.
$1.
Welcome, Applauders, to this month's podcast. I'm Lydia Malcolm.
I'm Naomi McQuaid.
And I'm Jen McQuaid. And you know what movie we're doing? Because you clicked on the thing.
Happy Halloween! Ooh. Oh, sorry, this is about witches, so maybe we should cackle.
Hey!
What a sweet little white witch you are.
I try.
Hocus Pocus from 1993. How old was everybody in 1993? I'll go first. I was 11 years old.
10 years old.
I would have just turned 12.
Yeah.
Actually, I wasn't quite 12 yet because this was released in like June or July.
Halloween in June.
I'd have turned 10 the March before.
Mm-hmm. I would have been 11 because that was after my birthday.
Good times.
Yeah.
I don't think I saw this in the theater. I think I saw it on TV.
Agreed. I think it was one of those things where it was on ABC Family, or like back when Disney and ABC had that like thing going on that they probably still do.
I am pretty sure I saw this in the theater.
Nice.
I'm surprised.
Well, I mean, I may have gone to the theater either by myself or with my younger brother. Like we could have gotten some money to go watch it. When I was visiting my dad, there was... within walking distance, there was a movie theater.
Okay, that's pretty lucky. We had to take a bus.
Right.
The 187, yo.
I never took the bus with my older sisters for movies because that was something we generally did as a family. But this would not have been something that we saw in the theater. So I would have probably just seen it on repeats. But like Naomi was asking me earlier, who would you watch this with? And I mean, outside of maybe my sisters every once in a while, like when this was on... 9 times out of 10, I was watching it by myself because it's such a well put together movie. And it was one of those things that you liked when you were a kid. And then you do stuff later and you're like, oh, this was a clear indication that I was going to totally be a theater kid because there's all these theater things. So,
yeah. Yeah. I would not be surprised if the Venn diagram of kids who love this movie with a passion and theater kids overlap a great deal.
Right.
I wonder how many people this was an introduction to Bette Midler for.
This was not my introduction to Bette Midler. I mean, for me, Bette Midler, like, what is it? Oh, let me double check some things.
Beaches was mine.
Yeah, Beaches. But I knew her because of her music.
Hmm.
So I'd seen this movie, but I wouldn't call it my introduction. I would say Gypsy Rose with, you know, the musical. Madeline and I used to watch it all the time. If you're gonna bump it with a trumpet. Is that Gypsy Rose? I can't remember. Shoot. Madeline, scream at the radio.
Yeah, my intro, let's see, when did this come out though? Oh no, this was. Okay, so my introduction to Bette Midler would have been Some People's Lives, in which she has, I mean, it was the album that has From a Distance, We Are Instruments. I love that album when I was younger. Oh, but they have like, oh my goodness.
What was the movie where she was like doing like a promo for the army where she was like.
Oh, yeah. That was like with James Caan, I think.
Mom and George would listen to the soundtrack whenever we drove anywhere. And so I memorized those songs.
So it was for the boys. But yes. Like Bette Midler, she did this. She did a voice of the poodle in Oliver and Company.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And she was in a lot of stuff in the 1980s, like Big Business, Ruthless People, First Wives Club was the 90s, but Beaches. Yeah. So like I would say that Bette Midler was kind of pretty big just in my life growing up with some of the movies that she did. And Some People's Lives was like something that I cherished until I became a teenager. And then I was like, I'm too cool for Bette Midler.
And then you realized that was a lie.
Yes.
Yeah.
I should probably go back and re-listen to that album, see if it still holds up for me. Kind of like Natalie Merchant with Ophelia. That's an album that still holds up for me.
Yes.
So might have to see that for Bette Midler.
Haunting, that Natalie Merchant.
Oh, yeah. So before we really dive into, you know, Sean facts and the plot, Bette Midler has been under some scrutiny for a tweet that she put out there that, in my opinion, was a little bit tone deaf.
Oh.
She was talking. It was like after the overturn of Roe v. Wade in a bunch of the states, or the Supreme Court and everything, when that was going on earlier this year. She had tweeted out her protest for it, but it was, let me bring up the actual tweet because I don't want to misquote her. Yeah, so her actual tweet said, "Women of the world, we are being stripped of our rights over our bodies, our lives, and even our names. They don't call us women anymore. They call us birthing people or menstruators and even people with vaginas. Don't let them erase you. Every human on earth owes you." Part of the backlash that she got with that tweet was because of the fact that in the medical industry, the terms birther, menstruator, and people with vaginas refer to people who can still get pregnant, including trans men.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's like pretty big in the gay community.
Yeah. So it sounded kind of turfy.
It sounded a little bit like she was being exclusionary.
Did she say anything about that?
I mean, she came back and said that it wasn't intentional, but like, if I'm going to be like a key figure in a marginalized community, the way that Bette Midler is for the gay community, I would think that she needs to understand that the terms that are being used are specifically for medical purposes, mm-hmm. and they're used to be accurate rather than to be exclusionary or to try and strip women of their rights. The thing about like science in the medical community is they need accuracy. They don't need poetry, for lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they use these kind of terms, they're using it not to isolate cis women. They're trying to use it as a way of including trans men in the dialogue.
Yeah. When we talk, a lot of what we focus on is gender. Gender is a construct and it applies to a lot of people and it varies so wildly amongst people. But I think it's a good point to make that we're talking about biology. And I don't mean like mental, chemical-y biology. I mean like physical presence of ovum and uterus and
right
the consequences thereof and the control that people are trying to exert on those things. Yeah, I can see how that hit real wrong.
Yeah, and I only bring it up because I was the one who chose this, chose the movie, and I didn't want to just like completely, you know, overlook the fact that she, you know, said something that is controversial in a marginalized group that ultimately I'm not a part of. And I mean, anybody out there who has a different opinion about what she says, you know, feel free to email us at shockedandapplaud@gmail.com and Jen can forward that right to me.
I was so loving a lot of, I mean, as we are film people, as we are like media people, like we like to take in all of these different things. Like the trouble is that there are going to be problematic people involved in things that we love. Like, I want to do Chocolat at some point because I don't think you've ever seen it. And it's probably, it is my favorite Johnny Depp film. But mm-hmm. like, that's a can of worms I don't want to deal with right now. But if we do it, mm-hmm. then we're going to have to talk about it. I was talking to a friend at D&D on Friday. And I was like, did you look up that cartoon I told you about? He's like, no. And I was like, well, let me pull up the theme for you. And I pull it up and it goes Miramax. And I'm like, oh, I like Miramax a lot. And then it goes a Harvey Weinstein. And I was like, well, okay. So I didn't know that this was a Weinstein thing because it came out when I was like 4
mm-hmm.
or younger. And I just loved it because it was a cartoon from Canada.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was from Canada, but it was called, did you ever watch David the Gnome?
No.
That's a Weinstein thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, so I'm like, oh, I didn't know that when I started showing it to him. And then I was able, acknowledging that, then the theme plays and Jen and I are just singing along to it because it was so intrinsic, you know, it was such a part of our youth that like you can't erase history.
Mm-hmm.
You can't say you didn't enjoy something. I mean, you can't say you didn't enjoy it, but you'd be lying. And it's better to be honest and say, I loved this thing. There are problems with it now. And I love Bette Midler. That is problematic towards people that I love.
Right. Because it's not even that she's saying, I got myself educated on the facts. I understand why this came across as bad as it did. I've learned and I've grown. And generally, when you get apologies from celebrities in these kind of situations, they like the better ones are the ones who are saying things like, I checked everything out. You know, I did research as to why the thing that I said was bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand where everybody who was frustrated with that was coming from.
Yeah, as opposed to the apologies that are like, everybody got mad at me and I'm worried about my popularity now.
Right. Or I didn't mean for it to sound exclusive. And it's like, oh, okay. Whenever you do something shitty, like, unless you are specifically doing it, like, unless you are the kind of person who stirs the pot or mm-hmm. you're the kind of person who, you know,
is antagonistic.
And yeah, you're specifically going in as you're trying to antagonize people. It becomes like you don't know. Obviously, you don't mean to be a jerk in that moment. So, but like, again, I'm a cis straight woman. So,
oh, you're an ally. Know, don't yeah. worry. You're trying to do what's right. And that's.
I really like this movie. Yeah. Hocus Pocus is like, even watching it for the podcast, I was like, wow, this is really well put together. Oh, wow. I see that. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. I was like, it really does hold up, but it's kind of hard for it to hold up when you have those problematic figures later on in life.
That's what we're about here. There's bad stuff. There's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we should get into it.
Yeah.
But you know, we normally start out. Thank you for those caveats to getting in here. But we after finding out how we all got here, unless somebody has something else they'd like to throw in there, we normally start with a what do we start with now?
Sean facts.
Oh, sorry.
Are we doing this? Lydia together? Does it, and then we do it. That's okay. How it works.
No, I mean Jen, do
it.
Do you want to, like, we could try and harmonize?
Oh, like the sisters?
Yeah,
sisters sing. Oh, you didn't watch the same movie? Did you not watch this? They were getting.
She was setting up everything, so.
She's like, sisters, sing!
Oh!
Sean facts! So he's like that. Sisters, sing!
Sean facts!
Sean facts!
Gorgeous.
It took us a while to get there.
We got there, though.
You could have just, you know, instead of implying it, you could have just told us flat out.
No, I like giving direction like I know what I'm doing. That's you, Jen, with Sean Fax.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is me. That's great.
Did something come unplugged?
Oh no. I think I whacked a cord.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we do have quite a few Sean Fax. It's great when it's a high enough budget that we can... that there's like eyes on it.
We don't have to guess how much it cost.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't even know.
The last couple of choices from me have not had a lot of facts about them. Green Ghost and Man Baby. So it's good. Hocus Pocus 1993. The budget.
Are we guessing? I love it when you guess.
Do you want to guess both?
Yes. I guess that this cost $45 million.
Ooh, that's high for 1993. Thinking about the effects,
then it's 3 years away from Titanic.
3 years away from Titanic. I don't know how much Titanic was.
$120 million, and it was the highest costing film of all time at the time.
Okay, I'm gonna go with $60 million was the budget.
You both went over. Oh. I don't know if that really matters.
Wah, 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 wah.
I was the closest without going over?
Yeah.
With going over.
Yeah. Over.
I would never make it on The Price is Right.
Budget was $28 million.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Considering the talent that's in this, I mm-hmm. think that's pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. Box office.
Oh, I think it more than doubled, if not tripled, its money. So if it was about 30, let's say total $90 million.
All right. Remember, this is box office. So
fine.
This does not
60
include.
Million. Shh. You, Jen. Jen, 60 million. Lydia, you go.
59 million. I'm that soul.
59,900,901.
$1.
I'm just saying, like, if you ever get picked last on Price is Right, always choose a dollar.
The film was released. Oh, sorry. There's some other. So the box office was $45.5 million.
Dang it. Well, then we each got one. Air five.
So it definitely made its money back.
No. No, it's a budget was $28 million. The box office was $45 million, but that with advertising and stuff, that that means they did. It received mixed to negative reviews from film critics and was not a box office success, losing Disney around $16.5 million. Wow. However, largely through many annual airings on Disney Channel and Freeform, formerly ABC Family, there is a yearly spike in home media sales for the film every Halloween and is now considered a cult classic.
Woo.
It was also released the same day as Free Willy.
Oh, that's why it didn't make its money back.
I saw that one in theater.
Do you remember Free Willy?
Oh, yeah. Jamie was obsessed with it.
Yeah.
We had it on VHS.
Yeah. So it makes sense why it didn't make its money back. Also,
we're all giving our money to Michael Jackson, which is another thing we could talk about.
Like, if this had come out in Halloween of that year instead.
Yeah, Disney chose to release Hocus Pocus in July to take advantage of children being off from school for the summer.
That used to be a thing, because I would spend all summer in the theater.
Well, and sometimes you'd have those discounts. Excuse me. Sometimes you'd have those discounts.
Mouth gurgle might actually be auto-removed. We'll have to find out.
Okay.
Keep that as a mental note and see if it actually did.
Auto-detect mouth gurgle.
Maybe that should be our new beep anytime that we swear. Oh.
No.
No.
Because I love it when it's instead of like rah, 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 rah.
I had to remember to press our mute button 4 times so we could come back to that. I do remember like older movies being replayed in movie theaters during the summer too, for you to take your kids to, so that they'd be like, like a dollar for a ticket or $2, because they'd be making their money in concessions anyway.
For sure. Young Applauders, you won't know this, but like you used to be able to pay for things in coins, and I certainly paid for movie tickets in quarters a ton back in the day.
If I still have enough quarters with dollar bills, I will go and like get some dollar menu stuff. Heck, or like value menu, because
it's nice because they run out of quarters and stuff real fast. So it's kind of good.
Yeah.
If you're not doing it all in pennies.
Yeah.
Which is mean. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's get to the reason that we're actually doing this movie. A sequel, Hocus Pocus 2, was written by Jen D'Angelo and directed by Anne Fletchett. And it debuted September 30th of this year, which is 2022, if you're listening, years in advance when humankind has destroyed itself.
Robot overlords, here's an introduction to Hocus Pocus so that you can watch Hocus Pocus 2.
The distant future, the year 2000. In the 1994 TV documentary Hocus Pocus Begin the Magic, producer David Kirshner explains how he came up with the idea of the film one night. He and his young daughter were sitting outside and his neighbor's black cat strayed by. Kirshner invented a tale of how the cat was once a boy who was changed into a feline 300 years ago by 3 witches. The film's working title was Disney's Halloween House. That was a great decision to change that.
Yes.
Was originally pitched to both Amblin and Disney to do cooperatively, but Spielberg refused to work with a rival in the children's film business. Bette Midler, who plays the central antagonist of the film, originally written by Cloris Leachman, is quoted as saying that Hocus Pocus was the most fun I'd had in my career up to that point, which obviously makes me wonder what the most fun movie she would consider now. But Leo DiCaprio was originally offered the lead role of Max.
Mm-hmm. No doubt, because the guy who plays the Max is like a clone. He's like, if Leo DiCaprio had a baby with Devon Sawa.
That makes sense. He looks like a clone of Leo DiCaprio.
Leo DiCaprio was he decided to decline and go do What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
Okay.
Which is problematic, but still.
Yes, it's
the thing that made Leonardo DiCaprio.
It did, in fact.
All right. During her Divine Intervention tour in 2015, Bette Midler appeared on stage dressed as Winifred Sanderson, and her harlots appeared with her dressed as Mary and Sarah, and the three of them performed the film's version of I Put a Spell on You. During an interview leading up to Hocus Pocus 2, David Kirshner revealed that a Broadway musical adaptation of the original film is in development.
What, now?
Yeah.
Now?
Yeah.
Yes, we get a musical.
Okay, if it comes to Seattle.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Winner of the Saturn Awards, 1993, for Best Costumes, and Best Young Actress Award, 94, for Thora Birch. We are done with the general Sean facts, and I will have some in-scene stuff for us later.
Yay!
Well then, applauders, you know what time it is. No, you might be new. You don't know what. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to scene by scene it for you.
Yeah. You're going to talk about it longer than it takes for you to watch it and form your own opinion.
Strap on to your recalled Harry Potter vibrating wand toys, because this is going to take you for a loop. You can edit that out, too.
I will. Or I won't. We'll find out when it comes out.
I hope that's a reoccurring stupid shit we do.
The cackling?
Yeah. One person, like, when you know it's bad. It's real bad, and you're going to have to cut it out. Like, you should just play a unique, weird cutout noise and then just cut to the cackling.
Yeah.
You'd be like, strap onto your weird vibrating, and then you're like, doo 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 doo. like hold music.
Oh, yeah.
For the entire length of the rant.
What you have to do is you have to do a bleep, and then you do the hold music, and then you do the cackle.
Yeah. Like, we are experiencing technical difficulties.
Yeah.
They aren't shutting it down fast enough. Well, Lydia.
What movie are we doing again?
Hocus Pocus 2.
Oh.
No, we're not doing Hocus Pocus 2.
Oh, but maybe next year.
Maybe.
So, Lydia, you being the only one of us who's seen the sequel.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not looking at anything more than, like, does it live up to the first one?
Or you want to save that to the end? I
think I'd like to save it for the end, because I did actually form a shocked and applaud for Hocus Pocus 2. But I know you guys are going to, like, I don't think it's going to spoil anything.
Yeah.
But it's still, like, yeah, it gives a nice, like, little rundown of my thoughts on the movie and what I liked about it. And one of the reasons why it, never mind, we'll get to it.
Okay.
Okay, cool. So we're going to get into this movie, and it starts out with the opening text crawl. It shows this, doesn't it show like a tombstone or something that marks the date as 16?
It's a book.
It's a book.
It says 1693.
Right.
The book actually says Hocus Pocus on it.
Oh, that's right. It like opens, does it open up?
No.
No.
This is just not Shrek.
This is not a storybook, like one of those storybook openings. It just shows
a storybook because
it shows the opening of it shows the front of a book.
Yeah, and that's it. We never see that book again.
Yeah.
But then let's do like a The Shining pan, like a pan over like water and trees and stuff, and you occasionally see a glimpse of the shadow of what we assume to be a witch, and we're right to assume that.
Mm-hmm.
With some sweeping music. It's pretty good.
It sounds a lot like Danny Elfman, but it's not Danny Elfman.
Should I find out who that is?
Yeah.
Keep talking and I'll interrupt you.
Well, it reminds me a lot of Batman Returns, the soundtrack from Batman
yes.
Returns. Applauders, you should go and check out our episode about Batman Returns. And that came out like a year before this one. Like probably like, I want to say it like, it probably came out around like maybe 6 months earlier than this one. So it may not have had that much of an effect on.
But there's musical themes that run throughout every right. strand of media. So the fact that it has this kind of larger than life swellingness.
Right.
Music was done by John Debney,
the son of Dan Elfman.
John Debney is also known for the live action Jungle Book. He was composer on The Greatest Showman, The Passion of the Christ, Iron Man 2, Loki, the TV series, and a whole bunch else. So he's pretty prolific, even though I've never heard of him.
Got a solid career working for Disney.
Yeah.
Yeah, do it. Get your money. Not related to Danny Elfman. Okay.
No. But it sounds a lot like Danny Elfman. And like thinking about how iconic Danny Elfman's music is, hopefully you can kind of get an idea. It's not the soundtrack throughout the entire movie. It's just mostly in this opening scene where we see the outline of a witch flying over some sort of like colonial town from the 1600s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we cut to a sleeping boy.
Yep, he shoots straight up in his bed after a figure crosses across his window.
And then we cut to some barn animals.
Yeah.
And then we cut back to the bedroom. And he goes, Emily? Because the first thing I do when I sit up in bed is call out my sibling's name. Abraham? Maggie? Lydia?
Well, so back in colonial times, kids would actually share rooms. It was very common to share rooms, even beds. And so if they know that there's something is going and stealing children, it would be something that he would be concerned about. So, but it does show that this character who we learn later on is Thackeray Binks. Thackeray.
It sounds like you have a lisp.
Gracias. Sorry.
A Spanish lisp.
And he goes, he's trying to find his sister. He can't find his sister. And so he sees his friend and he's like, Elijah, where did you see Emily?
Sorry.
Did you, he was that me? I don't think that was me.
I could have been. Oh, I might have knocked over.
Okay. sorry.
Witches.
but he grabs his friend. He's like, did you see my sister? And he's like, no, but look. And then there's like this pink smoke coming out from the forest.
He goes, summon the elders.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a chance I could save her or something like that.
Right. And so he goes running into the woods.
Barefoot.
Which just
screams gross to me.
Well, it also screams painful. You don't know what's on there. Maybe he does this all the time.
Yeah, I don't have 17th century feet strength, so I don't know. But we do see him pratfall down a hill real hard, ripping his poor poet shirt.
Yes.
P.S. When I get into the next tax bracket, I am going to buy like 5 poet shirts and anytime I'm not at work. And maybe if I am at work, I'm going to be wearing them unironically.
Yes.
Are you going to tear them open on occasion?
Only if you ask, Jen. Real nice.
Rip a sleeve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go walking barefoot in the forest.
Nope. Boots, leather boots, poet shirt, very Carrie Elway's Princess Bride style. Applauders, if you'd like to listen to what we say about a Princess Bride, please refer to that episode. Huh? Okay.
And so Thackeray comes to this house
say
where
Thackeray again.
Thackeray.
Hate it.
Thackeray.
I hate it.
Thackeray.
What's his last name?
Binks.
Let's just use that.
Binks. Okay. So Binks, you know, comes to this mysterious home, and we hear like as he's going into the woods, we hear this ominous sound of "Come, little children." It's like someone singing.
Oh, and kids laughing.
Yeah,
I love babies laughing. The second they get over like 6, hate it. Not in the woods. tell me what you want to wake up to a child laughing. Is there any scenario that is good for you waking up to a child laughing in the distance?
Movies have told me to say no.
And those movies are correct.
Right. But like Christmas morning, maybe you got some kids downstairs who are laughing and you're still asleep because you're hungover.
I'm the youngest child. If I'm not in the kitchen, not in the kitchen, where we keep our Christmas tree. If I'm not in the living room laughing, then something terrible has happened. Everyone is enjoying Christmas without me.
I don't know. Like, if I know I'm not going to get any gifts, I kind of want the kids to just sort of enjoy their time. Never mind. I guess we're of two different minds. Like, I'm not saying that it
isn't. You're pro-children laughing. I'm anti-children laughing. These are the polarized political beliefs that we hold on this, our podcast, Shocked and Applaud.
This is the real reason why we will have a civil war in America.
Oh, shit.
Some people want children to be laughing and others don't.
I'm pro-mirth. No, you're pro-mirth.
As long as they're not humming Ring Around the Rosie, I think I'm okay.
You moderate.
Here.
Come play with us, Jenny.
We are less than 5 minutes into this movie.
So sorry. Okay.
Okay. Anyway, so Binks comes to this house and he is like really scared for it and everything. And so when he gets closer to the house, that's when we actually get into the house and we see these three figures like standing over a child. And these are the three Sanderson sisters, played by Bette Midler, Sarah Jessica Parker, and Kathy Najimy. And they are hovering around this child talking about how they're going to suck her life out of her. And they're doing, and then they start doing the recipe and everything. So I don't mean to call out my sisters, but when we were younger, we would take a bucket and fill it up with water, and we would pretend to be witches.
Oh, hell
yeah. We were like maybe three. I was probably probably about 5.
Uh-huh.
I want to say. Uh-huh. I could be wrong. Maybe I was young earlier than that. But what I remember, and part of the okay, so what we pretty much did is just like someone would be over the bucket and we would be like, go get me that and go get me that. And then we put it all in the bucket and then we'd stir it and then we'd do like, woo, spell. It was fun. It was real fun.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, I say that I don't mean to call out my sisters because they're kind of super religious. And if they knew about, like, if they knew that people were going to be like, hey, I know what you did when you were like six.
Oh, if they ever contact us and are like, you talked about me playing witches when I was five, I will give them $20.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Give me a call.
Yeah.
Hey, what's up, Lydia's biological sisters? What's up? You want to get $20? Listen to our podcast. I myself, at like five, Abe was off playing somewhere. Maggie was off with literal friends. And I remember having the wheelbarrow in the backyard and I would fill it with water from the hose. And then I would throw, we had overgrown grass in the backyard and I'd dump dirt in it. I'd stir it with a stick. And I didn't chant or anything because I wasn't that creative. But then like I'd get bored with it and I knew I couldn't leave like a mud puddle in the middle of the wheelbarrow. So I dumped it over. And one time a garter snake slithered out of it like a magic spell. And I have it so in my mind. I had to have picked up this. And it was, I mean, I was really little. I had to have been younger than seven. But like, it had to have been at least a foot long to me. So it seemed 3 feet long.
Yeah.
And I was like, I touched a snake. I've touched plenty of snakes. But like, that was the first time I accidentally ever did it.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, it kind of makes me wonder how many other like little girls have these fantasies of being like, you know, witches or, you know, like casting spells. Like, cause like fantasy was for me like a huge part of like things that I liked in childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's kind of like the Harry Potter thing, you know, if you like have how many kids who are fans of Harry Potter took their pencils out and, you know, waved it around to try and, you know, create something out of nothing.
Have you ever held your hand up and tried to move something with the force?
Even, I think the last time I did it was earlier this year.
Okay. So here's my thought on that. And then we can get back right into this movie.
Yeah.
When it comes to the witchy brew stuff, I feel like it correlates to how it feels when you're a kid and things seem to magically happen, but it's because you don't know the process. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I love cooking is like you've got these things that you would not want to put in your mouth. And then through sorcery of heat and mixture and science and time and patience and experience, you create something delicious. That's magic to me. But when you don't know how that works, you're like, the f***? How does flour, butter, and the process of lamination turn into a croissant? I don't know. That's magic to me. And so it's so easy for a child to grasp onto the idea of magic or the force or any variation therein because it feels like there's so much going on around you that you don't understand. It's like explaining tort law to an ant. Like,
mm-hmm.
They don't know. They don't know. And they'll probably never know. But there's a chance they could know.
Right.
It also is very reminiscent in this scene of, I guess that lots of plays and movies have based it off of something really, really early, like the fates of Greek mythology. But then there's like that Shakespearean play. Is it okay to say that Shakespearean play on a podcast? Is it, I mean, do we have to?
Oh yeah. There's something specific you have to do if you name that Shakespearean play.
I've been to the castle, Macbeth, Macbeth, Macbeth. Oh, wait, my life has been a lot of bad luck. Maybe okay. You have to say it backwards. Beth Mech, Beth Mech, Beth Mech.
Back Mech.
I don't know, back Mech. Making meth is also magical.
Cab, Theb Cab, Theb Cab. Beetlejuice, 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 Beetlejuice.
Oh, no.
Bloody Michael Mary. Keaton, where are you?
Bloody Mary. So
Jen.
Double Toil and Trouble is actually Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just so you know.
Right. The three, they're called the Weird Sisters in Macbeth. Because we've said it so much. If anything's bad's going to happen, it's going to happen. It's like the...
Do you feel your arm going numb? I mean, is your side drooping?
My fingers have been numb, but that's because of a new job. maybe it's like that James Bond movie with Alan Cumming where he has the clicking pencil, and you know he clicks it, and if he clicks it the wrong amount of times, it explodes.
Oh no!
Do you remember that?
No, I haven't seen that.
Wasn't that GoldenEye?
I think that was GoldenEye.
That was the first time I remember seeing Alan Cumming, and like I hadn't seen him, and it was a while before I recognized that that was Alan Cumming, but that was a really great nerdy role for him.
Yeah, he was great in that.
Part five.
We've been here for 50 years now.
Okay, so they kind of smell him and they walk around away from the girl, right?
Well, so they're brewing the potion. They get the go get a dead man's toe and make it a fleshy one. That's
a fresh one.
A fresh one? I thought she said fleshy.
Oh, but then later on the lady says a fresh one. So it's
probably the fresh. She probably got it.
Who's to say? Accuracy isn't what this podcast's all about.
We're just giving you the facts
as we see them.
But so they're brewing the potion, and then Kathy Najimy's character Mary, she's the one who like smells him, and then she's like, and then she goes over to Winifred, and she's like, goes over to Winifred, who's played by Bette Midler. She's like, I smell a child. And she's like, well, what do you think that is? And they points to the kid that they kidnapped. And this girl does not look nearly as scared as she should.
She's just super calm. She looks like a porcelain doll.
Yeah.
Like perfect straight cut bangs that I could never have.
Right. But Binks.
Thank you.
Comes in. He like climbs the water wheel.
Well, Bette Midler's character does go to the window and open it, and she's like, look, a glorious morning. It makes me sick.
Yes. Those are the jokes.
Yeah. Fleshy book. Oh, and when she's reading the book, it sounds like a TikTok recipe. Have you ever watched a TikTok recipe? They're like, flour, salt, sugar, a little bit of herbs from my garden. Like, no measurements. Like, she's just like chucking dead things into a pot.
It tells you a dead man's toe. A dead man's toe.
Right.
So that is the measurement.
If he's web-footed, do you have to stick both of them in, or do you have to cut them apart?
I think you should avoid web-footed toes from dead men. Just leave. I mean, they're already
ableist, Lydia.
That's like when you try to eat one cinnamon bear, but they're like two cinnamon bears in one.
Well, then I guess you throw in the entire foot. But then it becomes a foot. I don't know. I'm not a witch.
Can I just notice in the moment that the three of us ladies are making magic right now?
Aww.
This is very funny, and I enjoy it. Keep going.
Naomi.
You're so cute.
Naomi has her bottom lip so far out, Pitch is now using it as a cat rest. Cat butt on Naomi's bottom lip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh,
then what's the third sister's name? It's Mary.
Sarah. And Winifred is played by Bette Midler. Yeah. Mary is played by Kathy Najimy.
Yeah.
She's kind of like the level-headed one. Mary is the level-headed one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
She's the helper one.
She is the helper. Yeah.
But she and Sarah start throwing dead men's toes at each other.
Right. Sarah Jessica Parker plays a character who's conveniently named Sarah.
Yeah.
And they start throwing things at each other. And Winifred's just like, stop it!
Okay. Oh, they have to bite their tongue and they spit it into the pot.
So satisfying to watch.
It's satisfying to watch. Can you imagine biting off the tip of your tongue on purpose?
No.
They're like,
yeah, I know. But you hear that. You hear that.
Yeah,
yeah. It's just like, and they're so in sync with each other.
I'm happy Disney decided to not let them bleed from that, but that would bleed like a son of a bitch.
Yeah. Oh, and then they go to like spoon some of it into the child.
The spoon is comedically big.
It is.
I love
great.
It.
But that's when Binks says, no, and then he comes down.
They turn around and they say, a boy.
That's right.
And then Winnie automatically zaps him. Just zap, zap. He starts to fall down. And like Bette Midler in this beautiful way, she just gives a little, like he's already fallen down. And she goes, blink, with one more little zap. And he just falls down. Gorgeous.
Right. But chaos ensues, and he eventually knocks over the cauldron. Mm-hmm. And that's when Bette Midler goes, no. So we got two dramatic no's already in the first real scene of this.
Well, now they've got him, though. And they're Winifred's like, well, what shall we do with him? And
But before that, Mary's like, oh, Winifred, do you see the potion took? And I didn't see the girl drink anything.
They don't show any child, so for spoilers later, drinking it.
Yeah.
I think they kind of shove it in their mouth. And like if they get any in their mouth, they're affected.
Right. They look very old at this point. And then when they go to suck the life out of this child to, you know, get younger.
Mm-hmm.
And after they do that, that's when they go and say, what are we going to do with the boy?
Hang him on a hook and let me play with him.
That's what Sarah says.
Oh, I don't know what that means, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
But I can imagine a young man being like, all right, young Sarah, okay. Sarah Jessica Parker.
But still, she's an adult, and they're children.
Yeah.
And I get that there are guys out there who, even as kids, would not see that as being a bad thing, but it is.
Because if it's a hot older woman, it doesn't count as super gross.
Right.
Please hear my super sarcasm in that.
As opposed to an ugly older woman?
Yeah. Or a man.
Yeah.
If a man said to me, I'm going to hang you up and play with you, I'd be like,
gross.
Yeah. But because she's hot,
they're getting away with
it. Plus also, what does she really mean? Because I think if I were Sarah Jessica Parker, I would have been like, oh, she's a witch. She's going to do witchy things to them. Right?
Yeah. But like,
her character is the most sexual of all the characters in the entire film.
And so it's easy to extrapolate that she might do something
sexy.
Sexual with them. Mm-hmm. It's still gross.
We'll just set that on the shelf. We don't have to have that with us this entire journey.
We'll put it next to the dead men's toes.
Yep. Okay, so they decide, now that they're younger and the girl is deadish, we only see her with like white hair head hanging down. We don't know.
Right.
We assume dead.
She's definitely not frozen faced. Like, you, yeah. It's easy to extrapolate that she's dead at this point.
Yes. And so they decide, what are they going to do to Banks? And they go over and they say a beautiful little poem that I did not write down.
Yeah. Before they do this spell, he lashes out and calls Winifred, hag, no one will ever love you, no matter how beautiful you are or how young you are. And she and Winifred says, sisters, did you hear what he called you?
She cannot handle being called ugly at all.
But still, it's like that's also the comedy mm-hmm. that we're going to be given. It's very obvious. It's very like, you know, there's like the Three Stooges dynamic that the sisters have
yes.
together. And it's just nothing but enjoyable. So, but then they say this poem that none of us wrote down. So we're going to fake it right now.
Oh, fantastic.
I think it starts with twist the bones and bend the back.
It's a lot more poem before he's a cat.
I remember something like black as black for the fur.
Mm-hmm.
I remember thinking that is not how metaphors work.
They say black as this, but they never say what this is, but that this, and then they lower their hands.
Right. And it kind of makes it sound like hissing.
Yeah. Well, what happens is he starts screaming mm-hmm. and his scream turns into a cat yowl.
Mm hmm.
And they say they're going to curse him with immortal life. So I'm like, immortal black cat, excuse me, dream.
Yes.
Like, yes. Sign me up.
Yes.
Sign me up.
The 90s were like a haven of like black cats that could talk. You got Salem from Sabrina the Teenage Witch, mm-hmm. iconic. Mm-hmm. You have Luna from Sailor Moon.
Oh, what?
What?
Yeah.
Give me, I mean, I think I had a black, we had two black cats growing up. And I kept looking at mine like, so you're gonna give me like a magic wand that's gonna like let me change my clothes whenever I want, right?
Oh, yes.
Right?
Mm. I mean, I didn't even watch that much Sailor Moon, but I get rounded nails because of the transformation sequence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Immortal cat, yes, please.
And then there's a knocking at the door.
I say that the mob arrives.
Yes. And then they're like, cover up the child. And they're like, oh, we're just spinsters in our house, not doing anything bad.
It's Mary says they're enjoying a quiet evening, but it's clearly morning.
Yeah. But then Sarah goes, sucking the lives out of children. And that's when Winifred grabs her throat. And then Sarah Jessica Parker does this like, face.
And then we cut to them being hung.
Yes.
Okay. And you know how I feel about this, but the noose placement is bad. Your noose is supposed to be placed. Never use this. But the noose is supposed to be placed behind the ear to the side of the neck. Because otherwise you can get what's called a messy hanging. And a couple different things can happen. One, you don't break the neck and you just dangle there for 15 or more minutes while you slowly choke to death. There's also other ways that I don't want to die by getting hung. You can have like, if you're big enough, you can have your head pop off, right?
Now that would be a fun way to get hung.
Well, you're not really hung. You're just split head from body.
But still like, oh, we're going to hang you. Ah!
But also when you're decapitated, remember that your head is still functioning
yeah.
for the better part of 20 seconds. A well-placed noose with proper droppage, you will have instantaneous death.
So if I ever get decapitated, I should really focus my eyes to go in like this.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. When you die, your eyelids don't close.
Nope.
So they stay open.
Yes.
So when someone has to go and get my head, they're just going to see this.
But also, you won't be able to make sound, but you'll be able to move your... Wow. The way I'm phrasing it sounds like this is something I was expecting to happen. But you could still move your mouth. So you should like remember the guy's name, assuming just be like, Gerald, you douche. How dare you? I bring you with no. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They're placed for theatrical look, but they're not placed right. And so I'm like, bleh.
This is where the science breaks down for you.
There are other places where the science breaks down worse, but okay. This is just sloppy execution.
Thackeray's dad asks what they've done with his son. Mm-hmm. And Bette Midler says, I don't know. Cat's got my tongue.
And then they all start laughing.
The witches start laughing. The mob doesn't start laughing. Yeah. And I would like to reiterate to you applauders and my also fellow podcasters, this is a wholesome Disney movie. And we're at the hanging in the first 10 minutes.
We've already had a child murder coming to a hanging.
Yeah.
We have cursed child.
Yep.
So, but then they start to sing. There are Winifred's like, sisters, sing. And then they start, you know, like
they chant and they're like, yeah.
And all of the village people are like, oh, cover your ears, that sort of thing.
The one kid, one guy holding the book, the sacred, did we say sacred fleshy book given by the sacred, not sacred, but like anti-sacred. What are the
cursed fleshy book?
Yeah. Given like to Winifred Disney's, by the devil.
It's like Disney's answer to the Necronomicon.
100% with a big fleshy eyeball that blinks and stuff. And she talks to it, caresses it. It's super gross. Bibliophile. You know what I'm saying?
They have a relationship.
They do.
I mean, both of them, like, here's the thing. Book really loves her. The book really does care for her. I mean, do you know how many times it's trying? It's not like, you know, they got a kinship there.
You're not wrong. So the book falls to the ground, flips open to an enchantment. She's like, on Halloween, a virgin will light the black flame candle and bring us back and we'll something, eat all the babies. It doesn't really matter now because then the mm-hmm. barrels are kicked out from under them.
Right.
They drop and we see dead people's feet hanging. Mm-hmm. And then.
Yeah. They like Jojo Rabbit at this.
Yeah. Yeah. Except less sad than Jojo Rabbit. And then the cat tries to like rub up against the dad's leg, Banks's dad's leg. And he's like, back, foul beast or whatever. Then we get a narration. Mm-hmm. And the narration is a teacher who's just like, and so it is said every Halloween night for the last 300 years, a black cat is guarding the old Sanderson sister's house. And I'm like, how hard would that be to check? Mm-hmm. How hard would that be to check?
Yeah.
Not hard at all. Do you see a black cat?
Mm-hmm. See if it'll talk to you.
Or like, I mean, just look for a black cat. It doesn't really matter. But here's my problem. This is taught in a school.
So it's a... On the blackboard behind the teacher, it says, you know, talks about literature. So she's probably like an English teacher. She feels more like the drama teacher because of how she's presenting herself and she's trying to get them involved.
She has a witch's hat on and then she dramatically throws a streamer at a child who screams and then they all clap. I've never had a teacher tell a story where we all clapped at the end.
I mean, they have to really like this teacher. Like,
I kind of do.
I mean, the little bit that I've seen her, she's entertaining at the very least. So maybe she's the teacher who makes school fun. And maybe
love the teacher who makes school fun.
Yeah. And like maybe that's why she gets such a rise out of the children. Because as the scene progresses, my note is, what the f*** is up with this classroom live studio audience much?
Okay. You're not wrong. But all of that. Now, I've never lived on the East Coast. I've never experienced that culture. They're all in like solid colors, looking like they're probably 5 years older than like 1993 would be. But there's one kid in a tie-dye shirt who's standing out because of the bright colors. And he's like, that seems like a crock of bullshit. And then my notes say, his reasonable skepticism is poo-pooed.
Right, because like he says, it was all everyone knows that Halloween was invented by the candy car company. And then there's this girl behind him, you know, she's a hot chick.
The local girl sets him right.
Yeah, she's like, actually, it was about Hallow's Eve when the spirits could come out here. And then he tries to like one-up her by trying to give her his phone number.
Yeah, he's like, if you ever come around or whatever, give me a call. And he slips her a piece of paper.
And that's when the rest of the classroom goes, ooh. And that's when I'm like, this was filmed in front of a live studio audience.
They stand up to go because the bell rings. And this guy from behind her is just like, hey, new guy, never going to happen.
We never see this guy again.
Doesn't matter. I don't care. But he got a line. So he got like, mm-hmm. What is it? He got not extra credit.
He got he didn't
scale.
Get,
he got scale.
He got scale. Yeah.
Probably. I don't know anything about money in Hollywood.
Yeah.
A speaking role.
Hey, did you notice that the kids and the teachers are acting like they're getting out for summer break?
Yeah.
Silly string.
Mm-hmm.
Irresponsible.
Bike montage.
Well, he's right. He rides after her. Remember this part?
Oh, yeah. So outside the school, uh-huh. He goes, like, they're still talking about, like, oh, you're the new guy, blah, 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 blah. And then she hands him a piece of paper.
Well, he goes, sorry for embarrassing you. And she goes, you didn't.
Oh, yeah.
And he's all like, she's like, you really hate it here. And he's like, well, the leaves are nice, but I just don't get all this Halloween stuff. And she's like, right? And I totally would, because if somebody's like, I have no joy in my heart, let's hang out. I'd be like,
no.
Yeah. So she's just like, hey, maybe you'll come around. And then she holds up a piece of paper and she goes, trick or treat.
Yeah. And then he opens up the piece of paper and
she's walked away.
And she's walked far away. And it's just the number that he gave her.
His name is. She just
first and last name and the number.
Okay, but 10-year-old me thought that was so slick. Like a big f*** you, buddy. Like, yeah. I thought it was the coolest. I was like, yeah, give it right back to him. You don't need to take that nonsense.
Both of them are kind of like forgettable as far as I was concerned. For me, it was all about like the cat, Thora Birch, and the sisters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. By any stretch of the imagination, mm-hmm. you could take out everything but the witches, the cat.
And Thora Birch.
Who's Thora Birch?
That's the little girl.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, Danny.
Yeah.
But we haven't got to her yet.
Bike montage! Now we get to the bike montage.
Yeah, I'm like, of course he's a BMX master.
Right, but they show him going through the town and it's like, it's like that 90s, like, this town doesn't have any real problems yet music.
Look how Halloweenish they are.
Yeah.
And he's just trying to get through. Get on by.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then he goes into cemetery. Chekhov's cemetery is what I called it.
I call this scene Jay and Loud Bob.
Yeah, because
before I knew that one of the guys' name was Jay.
So we got two bullies, and one of them is obviously named Jay, but he's like this tall, skinny, blonde guy.
Leather jacket, loud, obnoxious laugh.
Obnoxious laugh. Mm-hmm. And then we have a more stock. I wouldn't even call him like fat. He's just stocky.
Yeah, he's just a broader guy.
Yeah.
His neck does connect with his head and shoulders.
Yeah.
So he appears chonkier, but like chonky by like 90s standards. He's just a bulky guy.
He's a bulky guy. And this is Ernie.
Don't call me Ernie.
Oh,
my name is Ice. And then he points to the back of his head.
Where he has shaved out his hair in the name of Ice.
The word Ice is blazoned in pasty whiteness.
This movie makes fun of white rappers and I am here for it.
Yeah.
He's so much like, that's my rap name. And
they demand cigarettes of him. He doesn't smoke.
Right.
Oh, you're all health conscious because you're from California, huh?
Right. They demand money. He's like, no, I'm not going to give you money. And they're like, you're not going to give us smokes. You're not going to give us money.
What am I supposed to do with my evening?
Yeah. He's like, I don't know. Maybe you could learn to breathe through your nose. And then that's when Jay says,
oh,
yeah, I'm not supposed to say that. But then they clock him having these really nice shoes. They call them trainers, so they're cross trainers.
Mm-hmm.
And so they take him off. And then the next shot, you have him walking into his home or riding on his bike without shoes.
He walks into his house and his mom and dad are unpacking stuff, even though they've been there for a week, right? Which is fine, but it's like the stuff in the middle of the, I don't know. I've never unpacked successfully from moving, so. They're like, the mom goes, hey, how was your day? And he goes, it sucked. And the dad goes, hey, language. And I'm like, oh, language has evolved.
But then one of the parents says, well, was he walking around with no shoes on? And the other one's like, well, I don't know. Kind of showing that the parents are kind of oblivious.
Yeah.
So there's this thing in like 80s movies where you have like kids going on adventures and you're like, where the f*** are the parents?
Yeah, you're not wrong. It's the latchkey kid absentee parentism that mm-hmm. is depicted in a lot of 80s, 90s. Media all the time.
Right. Absent parents. But they do kind of give reason as to why the parents, because they bring the parents in later on, but then they give reason as to why they would be absent, which I feel is a little bit like a little bit more satisfying than just parents not being around at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So he's pissy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, you moved into this awesome house. You have obviously the best room in the house.
Yeah, he's got like this staircase that's leading up to like a place where he can, this little like little room that has like windows on all four sides of it.
He's got two married living parents mm-hmm. and a drum set.
Yeah.
And he's just mad about life. And I'm like, okay.
He's a teenager in the 90s.
Okay. Maybe he's mad that all of his pillows have trout on them. Have you noticed that?
You did point that out.
There are at least 17 pillows in that room, and all of them have trout on them.
What was the phrase you used?
Oh, I don't know now.
Hippie nautical theme?
Yeah, because he's got all of his tie-dye stuff up there.
Because he's from Los Angeles, man. Los Angeles people are hippies, right?
Remember the early 90s where you had to look like a stoner but be like a clean kid?
Yeah.
Oh, I was like that. I had smiley faces on everything. I had everything in tie-dye back then, too. It was pretty bad. I mean, it just looks tacky in retrospect. I don't hate tie-dye. It's just you can't have tie-dye everything to prove how chill you are.
Right. You really just kind of need, like, one thing that's tie-dye, and it has to look like, I mean, it probably should be like something that you really enjoy, like a piece of media or just like a pattern, like, well, a tie-dye sunflower.
Having an object that you enjoy or a pattern you enjoy, it's all well and good, but we have cleaned houses together that decided to theme a room, and you can only dust so many lighthouses before you realize that they're all they're all just, it's a room full of to shine your way through the darkness. And nobody wants guidance from a but it sucks having to dust them all.
Last episode of Shocked and Applaud, there wasn't nearly this much swearing.
Sorry.
No, I'm not saying. It's just, it's interesting. There was like, I remember.
So being nice in front of Sean.
You were being nice. That was it. Okay. Oh, but then we see like weird POV from closet, and then sudden sister pops out of the closet like boo. Oh, as he's like caressing a pillow, and he's like, Allison. Is her name's Allison, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Did any of you, we can cut all of this, but did any of y'all make out with a pillow when you were younger?
Not a pillow.
Oh, I was a pillow kisser.
But I was like not teenager.
Oh, I was early teens.
Yeah, when you were doing that.
Yeah, like maybe pre-teeny.
Yeah.
I didn't.
I took the pillow on a date first. It wasn't like we just started making out.
I was like, oh, current crush's name. How are you doing? I just wanted to like, it was my, you know, like the stereotype of like kissing your hand.
Yeah.
But I wanted like a pillow. Because then I could use my hands instead of like kissing on my hands.
Okay, I have a great idea for a Christmas gift for you.
I can't imagine this going somewhere great. Go on.
I'm not going to tell you. It has to be a surprise.
You need one of those Japanese body pillows, but it's got Jen's face on it.
I was going to put like, you know, Dave Tennant, but okay.
Okay. One side Dave Tennant, the other side Martin Freeman.
If I can find that, yeah. I have to customize it.
Did not exist.
You just
my face hurts now. Okay, so you can cut all of that.
Yeah.
Okay, so he starts caressing his pillow and he goes, oh, Allison. And then his sister jumps out of the closet and goes, boo! And he goes, ah! Yeah. What did Mom tell you about coming to my room? And she's like, you're supposed to take me trick-or-treating.
Yeah.
And he's like, no. And she's like, you gotta.
Yeah, she's got like a lot of lipstick on for someone who's supposed to be 8 years old.
Yeah, but it's Halloween. You can do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. In fact, this is the beginning. She has lipsticks on all the way through this movie until the last scene.
Mm-hmm. It's always looking good.
Yeah.
Yeah, they touched that up.
She must be reapplying. Although, if you're a little kid actress, wouldn't it be super fun to put on lipstick to be to be in the movie?
That's kind of like the reasoning. Like, you know, she just wanted, because it's Halloween, you know, she wanted to like, her mom was like, go ahead and pull out a lipstick if you want and I'll put it on you. So,
yeah,
I can see that. It's just like, that's a lot of lipstick for a little girl.
Yeah, but her mom is dressing as Madonna. So there's some
spoilers,
liberal.
For part 57 of this episode.
Right. So he still says no, and that's when at the
he
scene
starts drumming.
Yeah, and she's just like, please, Max, will you just like take me out because nobody's going to be there and I'm going to be all alone.
Will you not be a jerk for one time?
Yeah, and he's just like, nope. And he's like specifically like putting his foot down, and like it escalates to his sister screaming at the top of her lungs for her mom.
So now they're walking down the stairs. She scares her dad. Scares her dad. He screams. I think it's cute.
Yeah.
And then he walks down. Max walks down the stairs, and he's all like, he's got a baseball cap and sunglasses on, and his dad's like, "What are you supposed to be?" Because she's just like a little witch.
Yeah.
And he's like, "What are you supposed to be?" Because I'm a rap singer. You know those rap singers.
Yeah.
That's what a rapper.
Yeah. And then his dad is like, "Oh, you have to make your hat go sideways." And he's wearing aviators and everything. So
Looks like he doesn't want to be there. I get it. Okay. So while they're out trick-or-treating, she gets shaken down for her candy by
Jay and Ernie. Jay and Loud Bob. Jay and Loud Ice.
Yes.
His name is Ice.
Okay. And she's like, she gets shaken down and she's like, no. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you have to give us your candy. And she's like, no, my big brother's with me. And my notes at this point say, this girl has no self-preservation.
Nope.
None at all. She's like, my big brother's with me and you wouldn't want to mess with him. But he's had his shoes stolen by these very guys.
Yeah, but she doesn't know that.
Yeah.
And her. Yeah. So, but it's like, it's a whole like, you know, I got to go ahead and deal with the bullies again. And he.
But there are six guys there mm-hmm. at least. And she thinks that her puny little spaghetti armed brother can take on six guys.
I mean, it's her older brother. So she thinks he can take on the world.
Maybe I'm more protective of my older brother than most, but like right. garbage.
Well, yeah, fair, valid.
Oh, they do. At one point, you see Ice throw a pumpkin in the air and all of the kids around are cheering and or screaming and running away.
Right. Because you got the bigger kids, like the teenagers, and then you got the littler kids mm-hmm. and the teenagers are being jerks and everything. Again, where is the adult? Like if I was handing out candy and I saw like teenagers in front of my house, I would be standing out there like, you want to try something?
Yeah.
You want to go ahead and try something?
Yeah.
All I have to do is call the police and say that you're trespassing.
Yeah.
You don't know anything. It's like, have you ever, you know, in Fried Green Tomatoes?
Huh.
You know the movie, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a moment where Kathy Bates' character, she gets cut off. While
in
she's
the parking lot?
Yeah. And then the lady and the girl's just like, sorry, we're younger and faster. And then she goes, and then she says, Tawanda. And then she rams her car into him several times. And then the younger chick is like, what were you doing? She's like, I'm older and have better insurance.
Yes.
That's the kind of adult that I would be.
100%.
To obnoxious teenagers.
I would. Now, this sounds more dramatic than I mean it, but I would spray them with a hose.
Yeah, I know. Like, you can clear out a lot of places when it comes to white bullies with water.
Yeah, Ice could probably use a bath. okay, so Danny, the little girl, says to Max, well, they're talking at each other, yeah. And he's like, you're just embarrassing me in front of half the guys at school, and why are you just and she's just like, they're walking up to another house, and she's like, I want to go home, and so she runs away, woman standing confused with a bowl of candy on her own porch.
Mm-hmm. And then she throws herself down dramatically onto a pumpkin.
Yes. And she's like, ah! And I'm like, okay, rein it in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it's like to be in a dual child household, but this is a bit much, even for an 8-year-old.
Right.
I'm like, oh, no, that's not true. I know a 10-year-old. I take that back. I fully retract that. That's on point.
Yeah.
I just wasn't that kid.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us for part one of our review of 1993's original Hocus Pocus, a Plotter. We hope you've enjoyed Sean Facts and our plot walkthrough so far, but we still have two parts remaining. Want to enjoy some more Shocked and Applaud while you wait for our latest? This month, I'm recommending our guest appearances. Check out our defense of Spice World and The Room on episodes of Reels of Justice by visiting the links in this release's description. Hey, this is your audio engineer and a person bound in human flesh, Jen. Do you love the sense of participation that signing a guest book provides? Why not leave us a review for the world to see? You can rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser.com, or directly at shockedandapplaud.com. We may even read your review on a future episode. We'll be back in 1 week for part two of our discussion of this definitive 90s Disney comedy classic. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.